We're talking today with Dr. Randy Bowman, of course, our extension cotton specialist for Oklahoma State University, based out of the Altus area. And Randy, you know, we've had a couple of tough years as far as cotton is concerned. The kind of the poster child is the lack of irrigation water out of the Altus Lugert Lake, but yet we've got more cotton production than just those acres. And it seems like we had a pretty nice bounce back for 2014.
In all actuality, Ron, we did, and we ended up with, I guess you might say, we ended up ultimately harvesting most of the acres in the Lugert Altus Irrigation District, even though we didn't have any irrigation water. Of course, that was thanks to some fairly timely, I would say, June and July rainfall. If we could have gotten a rain in the middle of August that would have provided about 2 inches, I think we could have really had a super year in a lot of places, including the district, and our dry land production would have really benefited from that. And, of course, we've got yields that are all over the place. We've got yields in some areas that were, I don't know, 250 pounds, which, of course, that's not very profitable at all the way to 4 bales again. And so the good news is that I believe NASS had us at 235,000 or 230,000 acres planted, and I believe they're saying we're going to harvest about 210. And I believe they've got our projection at about 220,000-230,000 bales. And the good news is I believe that we're going to make that, because based on the classing data from the Abilene Classing Office, I believe this last Friday we were right at 200,000, and it looked like they had brought in about 9,000 bales that previous week. I know we still have some gins running. I believe after visiting with Jeannie Heilman at the Farmers Co-op there in Carnegie, I believe that they're going to set a record. Jeannie seems to think that they may go over 40,000 right there at that one gin. So one way or another, we kind of had a significant recovery in some areas. But, again, we were a bit disappointed because we were really set up to have a really nice crop if we could have just gotten some timely rain in August. And, you know, we could have knocked it out of the stadium in a lot of areas.
Clearly those rains that came in that June-July period, they helped a lot of summer crops, but especially cotton.
Oh, yes, there's no doubt about it. If you go back and recall, about May 15th of 2014, we were in a very, very severe drought. We basically failed our winter crops, wheat and canola, again in Jackson County and surrounding counties in the southwest corner of the state. And so the environment flipped, and we ended up getting substantial rainfall right around the Memorial weekend and maybe, you know, a few days after that. I know a lot of growers scrambled to get the cotton planted, and the guys that already had it planted, maybe even dry planted, they were, you know, kind of ahead of the game in terms of getting the crop up and going from those weekend rains around Memorial Day. But the good news is that we were able to get pretty much everything was up, and we got everything emerged. We got some fairly good timely rains in June and well into July. And then I think we basically had zero precipitation around Altus in August. So that was a tough run.
Looking ahead, as growers are thinking about their plans for 2015, what are you hearing early on from some of your producers, and what's out there ahead of us? So obviously, we don't have any subsoil moisture to base any sort of plans on.
Well, you know, we're unfortunately, this is going to be probably the fourth or fifth year where we've seen some of that. It really doesn't take a lot of rain necessarily to make a crop in the summer, but if we don't have any subsoil moisture, then we certainly have got to have timely rain. And of course, the no-till production that a lot of growers are using, and it's actually not continuous cotton. It is a system where they typically will go in and harvest wheat and then keep that land fallow for, you know, the summer and the fall, and then that next spring come back in and no-till cotton into that. And, of course, you don't have any or very little evapotranspiration going on out there. So if you have rainfall, you can kind of bank that in the soil. So the no-till has really paid off for a lot of our dry land growers. And we have several of those in the neighborhood in the southwest corner of the state that's done pretty well with that. But, again, I think that one of the big concerns besides moisture that our growers are going to have would be cotton price. And, of course, we're seeing all commodities not look real shiny. And I think at the end of the day, I believe that we will continue to have a lot of growers that are, for lack of a better term, diehard cotton guys. And I think, too, you know, sitting here through the crops conference and listening to the economists talk, I think a lot of growers are really trying to decide what exactly they want to do with respect to the farm bill and their compliance, which programs they're going to participate in. So some of those decisions may drive some things also. But the good news is that we do have some new technologies coming down the pipeline. Of course, I was able to attend the Beltwide Cotton Conference in San Antonio, and it's always a real joy to, you know, to get to attend that because there's so many neat things coming down the pipeline. But we just really need to have, in our area, a good year start to finish and get us back in that neighborhood, you know, 300,000 bales or more production per year. That would really help. The other thing, too, that's really kind of exciting and may change the landscape, so to speak, is the module building picker and stripper from John Deere. I think that's going to have potentially a huge impact on what some of our growers in western Oklahoma may decide to plant or maybe to gravitate toward cotton. Of course, the John Deere stripper, I believe they call that a CS690, or I believe that's right, the module building stripper. It's going into production in 15, and I'm not sure exactly how many units they plan to make, but I believe that there will be more demand for that machine than what they can actually produce. So,
what's the advantage of it? Is able to maybe clean the field better? Is that the hope? Or?
Well, it's not necessarily on harvesting efficiency per se in terms of the actual harvesting units. What we're looking at is the ability of basically, you know, a couple of individuals being able to harvest instead of having to put together a crew. You would have basically an operator in the cab, and you would have, you know, a person perhaps assisting that individual and staging those round modules as they get generated. And so if you contrast that to where we are today with if you've got, you know, a reasonably sizable operation, you're looking at having to have a stripper harvester, a tractor with a bull buggy to move that burr cotton from the stripper over to the module builder. So, you know, we're talking lots and lots of moving parts and various personnel. So I think that could have a major impact there, you know, with what we see down the road. And, of course, they're not cheap, but they do show up to work every day.
Yeah. Seems like I've seen some round cotton bales coming down the road this year.
Yes. Of course, the pickers have been out for some time, and a lot of growers in the area have bought the round moduling pickers. And I think that what we will see down the road is the opportunity for growers that want the stripper harvesters, which, you know, that's a whole nother that's another discussion. We'll run out of audio tape here if we get into pickers versus stripper harvesting. But suffice it to say that many growers would like to have the strippers, and as they become available in the market from John Deere, those stripper harvesters, I think that they're going to change some things for us.